Imagine earning continuing education credits while doing exactly what you're doing right now. Well, you can. Gable Media has revolutionized the way you earn your continuing education credits with a groundbreaking approach. Forget running around town and scouring the internet for credit-worthy courses. Fulfill your CE requirements effortlessly by listening to engaging podcasts just like the one you're listening to now. Our podcasts are designed to educate, entertain, and inspire, all in a user-friendly environment. But wait, there's more. Architects, Gable Media is also approved as an AIA Continuing Education Services provider. Upon completion, we handle everything, from reporting your hours directly to the AIA to storing your certificates in your personal Gable Media profile for your self-reporting needs. So follow the link in the show notes and start earning your credits in the most innovative and entertaining way possible with Gable Media.
Respect the audience, try to understand the audience, and also try to understand your medium. You know, and that I think is translatable to just being an architect, even, you know, designing or talking to clients. I think to me, those are the things I try to think about a lot and have been forced to think about very specifically because of the medium of YouTube. But then I'd also like to be able to import back to be an ambassador, you know, like ambassador of architecture to the public, but then also an ambassador back to the discipline and to the profession of some of those lessons. And I think those are the big ones that I'm working on right now and hopefully can be valuable for people to really think about as they're crafting their own work.
Welcome to Context and Clarity, the place where authors, experts, and thought leaders come to have engaged conversations with entrepreneurial architects just like you. I'm Jeff Eccles, and every Thursday afternoon on Context and Clarity Live, Catherine McPhail and I, and our live audiences that are joining us from all across the internet, have a conversation with a special guest to search for clarity around the things that matter most to you, the architect, no matter what your context is. In this episode, we talk with Stuart Hicks, architect, educator, and YouTube star. All right, our guest today is an architect, an educator, and I'm going to say a YouTube star. He's a co-founder of the practice Design With Company and an associate dean at the University of Illinois, Chicago. Go Flames. He and his team make videos about architecture because architecture is everywhere and can help us to understand how the world works. Stuart Hicks, welcome to Context and Clarity Live.
Hello, thank you for having me. Good to be here.
It's great to have you here. We've been talking all week about your YouTube channel. We've been talking all week about explaining architecture and storytelling. So, you know, I think the place to start, and some of us are trying to figure it out, right? So what are the stories we need to tell and things like that? But you're an architect, you're an educator, obviously, like I said at the very beginning. Why did you decide to start making videos?
I saw what I thought was an opportunity. I had made videos as part of my practice to sell projects. And, you know, I was told when I was in grad school that I had given the worst presentation of a project that they had ever seen. But at the time, I wanted to be a teacher. And so I practiced really hard to try and get better at it. And I guess all of that kind of coalesced when I started making these videos for some projects. And then I saw this opportunity on YouTube. And what I thought was an opportunity. I wanted to do it for about 6 months to a year. I had recorded a single video 20 times because I hated appearing on camera. I hated talking to the camera. Thought I was terrible at it. But then COVID hit and I had to go online and make lectures where I just had to do it. And when we did live stuff, I bought a green screen and did skits for the students. And at the end, they said, you should make a YouTube channel. And I was like, you know, I needed that permission almost, I think, from them to say, you know, it's okay. Go ahead and start. And finally, I was like, I'm going to put it out. And I know it's not good yet, but every week I'm going to try something technical that I'm going to try to get better at. And I'm going to pair that with a topic. And so every week it's like, sometimes it's storytelling, sometimes it's audio, sometimes it's lighting. My lighting is bad, but you know, every time every time I try to do something a little bit unique and learn as I make a video.
I love that you need permission from the TikTok generation.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, 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 exactly. Like, would you watch this middle-aged guy talking to you on YouTube or not?
I think you're about 20 years younger than, who's middle-aged? I don't know. Let's all be middle-aged.
Yeah, well, we can all be that age. Where do you get your ideas from for the topics?
Yeah, great question. So when I first started, I had lectures that I've been giving as part of being a teacher. And so I started by just kind of like segmenting those, but quickly learned that like a lecture is not the same as making a video. Like it's a different thing. And then learning the audience of like who's coming to watch these videos. YouTube gives you so much analytics that you're able to assess really right away, like what are people responding to? What are they not? Like in the video, you can see where people step off when they come back. So being able to learn from that, trying to tailor it. So as far as where ideas come from, learning what the audience is appreciating, and then trying to tie together a few different things, like what's at my disposal for being able to tell a story? Am I equipped to tell this story? Do I have any special access that I can gain and bring some insight to this topic? More and more, I start with a topic like, can I make a good title and thumbnail first? And then create a topic around that, because that really is an important, like that packet, like how you package the topic is so important. It's almost more important than the topic itself, like learning that stuff. So where do I get ideas? I've got a running list of ideas. I'll see something and I'll put it in a note thing. I saw that Pinup magazine is doing this one on Barbie houses through the years. I was like, oh, that'd be a great idea. And then I'll reach out and see if I can make it happen, just so it just kind of grows on what I want to learn about, who I want to, and like, can I bring something?
I love that. James Petty, who's in New York. Yeah, he's got a question. I was going to ask a very similar question, but I think we ought to run with James's here.
Yeah, that's a great question. It's changed. At first, I thought to myself, I want anybody to be able to watch it or to want to watch it. I think now that answer to that question that I initially had, I think as it's grown, trying to be a little bit more specific, I think my videos now are probably for a general audience, but I don't want I don't want architects to vomit if they see it. Like, I think that, a lot of times when we as experts see things that are channeled toward the public, it can feel overly simplified, that sort of thing. And I really try to resist that. So I want architects to appreciate it. I don't think it's necessarily for architects, but I'm trying to bring that back. Like my next video, I met this morning with Getch Partners, who has a tower that is an engineering feat here in Chicago. And it comes down on it cantilevers off of its core. It's awesome. I imagine architects will want to watch this video, because I think I'll be able to get more insight into it than a typical, magazine article, even like talking to the designer, talking to the engineer. And my hope is that like through the channel's like sense of being able to say things plainly, but also have access to experts and people who are really engaged in these things, try to make it so maybe it bounces around a little more than it has.
I think that's a really important point, because one of the things we've talked about this week is why would architects, we've generalized it and say, why would architects tell stories? It doesn't have to be a YouTube channel. It could be a blog post. It could be, right, there's all kinds of mediums out there. But the idea of who, why are you doing it? But then right on the heels of that has to be the who, right? So who are you telling these stories for? So if you were to put yourself in the shoes of somebody in this community, which is, as you heard, Barry is in Scotland, and I haven't been paying close enough attention to see if Audrey popped in from Australia or others, all over the world, small firm architects. Why, if I'm not telling stories now, or if I'm not producing content now, whatever we want to call it, why should I be telling stories? Why is it important for architects to tell stories?
That's not a lens that I typically think of where I'm gaining the lessons from. So your question is a kind of new one for me. So I'll be speculating a little bit, but it seems like the primary times you're telling stories are one, maybe internally, as you're formulating your own design concepts and things, you're telling a story to yourself. And how you craft a story to yourself, I think, is useful for knowing when you're making quality decisions and that sort of thing. Then it probably expands to talking to clients, and then as marketing, right? You know, I think firms that have a good story, and where, you know, depending on where it comes from, they have a good marketing leg up on marketing. So I think that it's probably pretty intrinsic. And I don't know, one thing that resonated with me, I listened to Roman Mars, the guy who has the 99% Invisible podcast. And he was talking about when he took the Chicago Riverboat tour, there was this building. He didn't think much of it. He didn't really like it all that much. But when the person explained that these giant corners on the building were because the CEO didn't want anyone to have a corner office, that resonated with him. And he started to appreciate the building, you know, like he didn't like it more, but he appreciated it. And I think the power of the building to have a story for people to connect with and understand, I think is valuable for things we know, like marketing and talking to a client, but then also things we maybe don't quite yet know what the value could be.
I love that idea. I've not heard that Roman Mars story, but it, you know, it's, yeah, it's like pulling back the veil, right?
Yeah.
You know, how many people have you run into that, so, oh, what do you do? Well, I'm an architect. Oh, when I was in high school, or I always wanted to be an architect, and my counselor told me I wasn't good at math, or, you know, whatever the stories are, right? They took all the drafting classes, but they're still fascinated by, you know, what goes on, you know, sort of the backstage pass is what I call it. It's like, how do you guys design that office building or house or, you know, whatever it is that we're working on? That's a good story with Roman. What have been some of your favorite videos to do, and what goes into, I mean, you've talked about access, you know, and looking for the, you know, the unique things that you can access being in Chicago. I know a lot of the examples and things are based in Chicago, but what have been some of your favorites?
The current one is always the favorite, you know, so like my children, my favorite continues to be the one that I did about bricks. I talked to a brick expert who gives tours on Chicago brick tour. And I went to him and said, hey, I want to make a video with you. He was like, great, great. And I was like, I have this weird idea where what if I come to you thinking that bricks are alive because of this quote by Louis Kahn that thinks that bricks can talk? And the entire premise of the video is you trying to convince me that no, they cannot talk. They're not sentient. And we will do your tour, but you're also kind of teaching me why bricks don't talk or why they don't have to. And he was like, oh, I am so on board. I used to be in an improv troupe.
That's awesome.
Straight out of Second City.
Yes. He was like, I was in theater. This is perfect for me. And I was like, great. This was the first video I had ever filmed anybody else. I had to buy wireless mics to be able to work. It was a mess, but he was so funny. Like his dry delivery of like an exasperation with me of why bricks aren't alive. And then the payoff at the end, I don't want to spoil it, but you got to watch the end because there's a good ending too. And I was dying laughing editing that video. It was the first time I had to edit something that was like not written out for myself. Like it was a editing challenge. It presented a lot of challenges, a lot of fun. It was great having somebody on board and learning a lot from. And it continues to be more.
Everybody needs to go watch the brick video.
Yeah. It's called "Bricks Are Smart, But Architects Don't Listen."
Well, you'll have a little spike in that.
Exactly. Now, you know, you're obviously juggling a lot of things. You're teaching, you've got to practice, you're doing these videos, which, you know, I'm watching these videos. One of the reasons I love live stream, and as you know, we do this every day, is that I'm not doing any prep work, right? I'm research definitely and things like that, but I'm not doing what you do. We're not doing what you do. So I know a lot goes into this. So how do you balance all three? And you know, life and family and all those. And then how much, if any, alignment is between these three? Do they work for or with each other?
And how long does it take to put one of those videos? I was wondering that as I was watching.
I think a video takes about 40, 45 hours or so each, I think. I haven't tallied it, so I might be scared if I did. At first, I was doing a video a week, but it was during COVID lockdown, and I had no resting moment. I was working probably 12 hours a day, 7 days a week, nonstop. When I switched to one every other week, it feels a little more manageable. I have a week of pre-planning and then a week of post-production. I do it all myself. I edit everything. I've had help with research. I've now have a student, an intern, or a film student from a local school who will film when I go out and I'm interviewing people, and that's a big help. So, but I do most of it myself. I have people I talk to and things like that, conceiving with ideas. I did have a part-time person helping with the research, but for the last month, it hasn't been there. The process, yeah, like I about 40 hours, start with trying to think of is it a good premise? Can I get it around? Can I add anything? I do research, then I write everything. Even if I have an interview, I will rewrite the video prior. And then that structures what questions I will ask in the interview, and so that it can be kind of thumbed in or combed in to the video. Each video is about 2,500 words to 3,000 words, 4 pages, single space. And I guess I need the control of it. Like the live thing makes me nervous. It feels like the anxiety of it is more than the value for me of like, okay,
just throw caution to the wind. Here we go.
But maybe now, like, now that I feel more comfortable on camera and that right. sort of thing, I might start doing maybe like live things on YouTube or something. But that was very anxiety producing at the outset. So I write it all out, do it all as I can. It'd be nice to have an editor. I think that's probably next step. It's not that I think I'm good as an editor. It's just more like I almost don't know if I would know how to communicate what I would want to someone else, because it's only been internal, like you do everything. It's like, how do I even work with someone on this? I don't even know. Like, it's hard to conceive. Like, so even building that seems daunting. So I know it's a step, but I'm pushing it off probably longer than I should.
Yeah. It probably won't be that hard for them to, after watching all your material, understanding. You just need someone who can understand, can channel you. James wants to know if you film, use stock footage, or if you
I do
film all of B-roll.
Yeah, so I do. I have access to Getty images and video, and then Storyblocks, and I have a Shutterstock account. So I use all three of those. I've been more recently trying, so it's hard. So there's different kinds of parts of the video where it's like, it's hard to tell a story about something actually, because it's like, if I'm telling the story of how a building came to be, I don't have footage of that architect drawing the thing. I don't have stuff to fill it in. That's hard to do. And it's really unfulfilling to just like throw in stock footage of some random architect. So like what you can do with what's available is they're channeled together very clearly. Most recently, one of the more technical problems I've been dealing with is trying to do 3D animations in there. I've known how to do it. It's just kind of like, can I get it into my workflow? That opens things up a lot, because I can show sides of buildings that maybe I don't have B-roll for, or I can. And I also think on YouTube that plays well. It feels like you're getting information. I think like if a video is too laden with B-roll or stock footage, it feels like they just kind of cobbled this together like that. So I think things that feel more bespoke are much better. And I'm trying to eliminate as much B-roll as possible, but it's still a necessity. But I'm also trying to figure out how to write in a way that doesn't require B-roll. Maybe it's about when I appear on screen and I just don't rely on other stuff. It's just me being animated versus what I, when I do have something on screen, and trying to tailor that so that I don't need, you know, the same amount of B-roll. So it's something I think about and try to eliminate as much as I can, but it's also a valuable.
You're becoming a full-fledged movie producer at this point.
Yeah.
I was just thinking that if you just kind of came across doing this during the lockdown, you probably weren't thinking, I'm going to learn how to edit. I'm going to learn how to get these images and all the B-roll and blah, blah, blah. You didn't set out to be a filmmaker.
It's fascinating. And it's so architectural. You know, I've had to learn so much about lighting. I know much more. I mean, it doesn't show now because I'm off my setup. My setup is a Ferrari. And it's if anything is off, it's the Ferrari breaks down. It needs an engine out overhaul. But, I know so much more about lighting, sound, and the way it works. It's fascinating. That's all spatial. Then there's editing, which is timing and spatial. It's all architectural when I guess everything's a nail to a hammer, because I think everything through the lens of architecture, I see it as architectural. But as far as learning about it, I'm amazed how counterintuitive a lot of it is. Why you need to have a light pointing from behind you to light your, that makes no sense. Why do you need a light from behind? But you do. And, it's part of the process.
So has the video work informed your architecture?
Good question. Probably. I don't know how yet. I don't know if I would know how to characterize it. I probably would rely less on jargon to make sure, I don't know, maybe less faith in someone needing to have an architecture degree to understand what I'm trying to do, I think might be part of the design process. Is this understand? I would think that it's accessible, I think. I think that changes the way I design. To be honest, I design a lot less right now.
You've got a full-time job making videos.
Yeah. I'm also, my associate dean role is a facilities role. So the nitty gritty of getting facilities management stuff done, it's the total opposite of things. It's interesting. So I might also approach that differently because of that.
Right.
I did make a video about leaks that showed our architecture building leaking, and those leaks got fixed. So
so that worked.
Yeah, that worked.
Presented this to the trustees.
Yeah.
Is there a business case for you, right? And everybody's situation is different, but with the UIC, with your work, your architecture work, and with the videos, is there a business case for the videos?
It makes money on its own. A lot of, and outside sponsors. A lot of YouTubers, though, see YouTube as a way of channeling into a business something. Eric, the guy who's 30 by 40 workshop, and, he sees YouTube as a way of building a business. For me, that's less important because I am a teacher and teaching's my business, and that sort of thing. So I really like making videos, and I like teach. I started teaching right out of grad school. I loved doing it. And I see this as a way of elevating teaching. You know, when you're teaching at a university, the university doesn't care how good of a teacher you are. They care about, research dollars and stuff. And so I'm trying to be look, okay, we're going to elevate teaching. We're going to make this a thing. And I want the university to recognize that this has value and that sort of thing. So that's me. That's my business. So I love video. I love architecture and video. If there is an escalation of what I'm doing, I would think it would be about moving to documentaries or other formats of continuing to make videos. I don't see this as building a business of even selling online course classes or anything. I teach all the time. I have no real interest in making online classes or something like that. So in answer, I think it is what it is for me at this stage. Maybe at another stage, it'll change, but for me, I like what it is.
That's an interesting point too, because Eric was a guest on one of our guests on Context and Clarity Live, maybe a year ago.
A year ago, maybe.
Yeah, that seems about right. And in talking with Eric, I forget what the number is, but something like 70-80% of his income is coming from passive income. From, like you said, it's courses, it's affiliate, it's all these things. which is a different approach from yours. And Eric makes fantastic videos as well, but like you said, they're different purpose, different outcome, intended outcome there.
I mean, if there is a similarity, it's like I get my income from the university, and you know, this is seen as research, you know, engaging with the public. So to me, I'm just not that business oriented either. Like, you know, I'm an academic, so I get a regular paycheck, and like the roller coaster of YouTube and stuff, like I would never be able to rely, like just to rely on the income would be scary. It'd be so scary.
That's funny.
I'm just thinking about putting it into practice, and you know, there are thousands, hundreds of thousands of architects. And what if we all did videos, and would we think it's already been done, or, you know, Stuart's already done that video? Do you think there's a room for all of us to make videos about what we're interested in?
For sure. I mean, YouTube works well when there's a personal, when it's sort of personal. So if you're making something and you have a passion about the thing you're making, and you won't think that a YouTube video or whatever would be a good venue for exploring that, by all means. Like I don't, you know, so related to your question, I doubt 100,000 architects want to be YouTube, but there, I think, is a real intelligence in thinking about the different media that one can be able to engage, like YouTube, and understand. I have a theory about like how space is presented on YouTube. Like, I think YouTube as a medium for talking about space is very particular. It's about stories. Like if you watch the really popular videos on space, it would be like Architectural Digest home tours. And like those, I think, are popular because here's someone who's telling you why this thing has a story. Like why I picked this house because it has a history, and I like this base because my mom gave it to me, and people eat that stuff up. And I think YouTube, if you're thinking about putting a video on YouTube and you want to talk about your work, understand that YouTube is a medium about telling stories, and that you know, it's not just about the visual walkthrough, for instance. Like that won't play on you. No one will watch that really on YouTube. Like pretty visuals are a very, like, that only gets you so far. And I think one other thing that I've learned is if you're relying on people to come to the video because you're saying that this is architecture, and you're saying like you're trying to present this as if you should watch this or like this because it's architecture, that's not a good approach, because I don't think a lot of people just intrinsically like something because it's been called architecture. Like that isn't you've got to, I think, tell the story, talk about why people should care about this. And just because it's architecture isn't the reason. That's the reason I care. Like that's what's, I think, interesting is like, I want to promote architecture. Like that's what I care about, but it's not a good reason for a video to exist. So I think that kind of recalibration of like thinking about your audience, not relying on, well, this is architecture, so you should find this interesting. Like there, I think there's layers to how one might make a video on their own work and it playing well on YouTube. That doesn't mean, you know, thinking through the algorithm of YouTube is the only reason why you'd want to put your own video on YouTube. But if you do want to have it be a thing, I think that there's value in thinking through the medium and what biases this medium has.
As you were talking about that, it reminded me of the study, and I don't remember the specifics of it anymore, but it was the group that went out and they went to yard sales or something, bought a bunch of trinkets, and then listed them on eBay. And they listed them once. And, you know, I used this example the other day. I just made it up. Like here's the jade elephant. You know, it's 3 inches by 5 inches, and it, you know, we're listing it at $20 or something. And then they went back and they listed it. And, you know, here's this jade elephant that my great grandfather picked up in India during World War I. And, you know, there's another Seinfeld tie in here, but I forget what the numbers were. They sold at an exponentially higher dollar amount when there was that story attached, when someone could visualize and you know, attach, create an emotional attachment. And there's tons of research out there too on how we value products and services when we can make an emotional attachment to that, which is a, you know, something that architects really need to listen to. You know, when we start talking about the value of an architect, right? And so I, you know, when you're talking about that, it's like, that's related in a way to that study, certainly. Hey, there's Adam. Adam's got a great question. Great to have you here, Adam. Any advice for someone that's just starting their career in teaching architecture?
That's a great question. I think when I started teaching, I think the thing that I learned as I have taught longer is how to listen to the students and meet them where they are and prod them towards certain areas of knowledge and things like that without having it feel like you're too heavy-handedly saying, no, they're wrong, you know, should be doing this, and that sort of thing. I think when I first started teaching, I probably had a real wall up. It was like, no, I'm right, you know, listen to me. But I was really young too. So I was 26 or something when I started teaching. So I wasn't much older than them. And I felt like I had to establish my authority. And I regret that. Maybe I had to do it because I was so young. But like now, you know, treating the students with a lot of respect, listening to what they're saying, even if their ideas, like even if you've seen it before and you think it go a different way, trying to give them advice in a way that empowers them. Rather than tries to shut them down and reassert your own thoughts. I think that that's the biggest advice is try to empower it. Like the rhetoric of like, you got to break them down. And then like that, you know, that's such an outmoded idea. And no one would do that these days. But, you know, like it's so, you know, some of my old teachers that I had when they were old, you know, it was a different time and they thought it was about breaking you and then building you back up. And, I just don't vibe to that. So I think that's my biggest advice. It's not a prescription of how to do it, because I think how to do it is very difficult. But I also think it's unique to each person and each teacher, how they approach that. But that's the delicate balance, I think, that I try to strike. And I think I fell on one side, maybe for certain reasons. And I'm happy that I hope that that's I've moved on from there.
Yeah, it's no fun to get broken down.
Yeah, right.
It's true.
Well, there's another question about my favorite YouTuber that I look up to the most, and that's an interesting one. I love Tom Scott. If you are familiar with him, he is a British YouTuber who he is the master of the walk and talk. He can walk and talk and segue into a topic in a way that is so good. And it's hard to understand how or why he's so good unless you've tried it, because it's hard. And just watching him, he's a master. It's so good. And so he does some architecture every once in a while. But his videos are 6 or 7 minutes long. They're really narrative based, but they feel like there's no fat on it. It's boom, you're in, you're out, but it's fascinating. And I think he's my favorite to look and try to study. And I've watched everything he said about like how he does it. Like he wears an earpiece sometimes. Like I get into the nitty gritty of like the how. And there's another one today that I watched, Climate Town, who's really good. And it's all about climate science and stuff. And he has a video style too, that it's like, I can't figure out how he does it. Like, and it's like, how does he write it? How does he deliver it? Like there's a mechanics to it that I think is really fascinating. So I'm going to study him.
We're right up against the top of the hour, which is pretty amazing how quickly this has gone. This has been a lot of fun. As you think about everybody that's in the audience right now and everybody that's going to watch this, you know, at some point down the road, what advice do you have for an architect? And again, for everybody that's out there, we're talking about YouTube because that is definitely Stuart's world. I mean, go over to his YouTube channel, Stuart Hicks. Great videos there. I don't even know how many. There's a lot of videos there.
In the 90s, I think.
90s, yeah, and everything from, I think there's a little bit of a dose of humor here and there in all of them, but some purposefully humorous topics all the way through, you know, some famous architects of the past and linear cities and everything, and toilets and everything else in between. That is definitely Stuart's world, and what he's doing is awesome. That doesn't have to be you, right? This could be a blog, or it could be TikTok or Instagram, whatever, right? But podcast, yeah, that's a great point. What advice do you have for people that are saying, you know, there's something that I need to get out? Where's that thought process start? You know, maybe it's a strategy level or something else, or maybe it's just start. I don't know. What do you think? What's your advice?
Respect the audience. Try to understand the audience. and also try to understand your medium. I think that those are my pieces of advice. I think, you know, and that I think is translatable to just being an architect, even, you know, designing or talking to clients. I think to me, those are the things I try to think about a lot and have been forced to think about very specifically because of the medium of YouTube. But I'd also like to be able to import back to be an ambassador, you know, like ambassador of architecture to the public, but then also an ambassador back to the discipline and to the profession of some of those lessons. And I think those are the big ones that I'm working on right now and hopefully can be valuable for people to really think about as they're crafting their own work.
That's great advice. And it's important. I mean, we've talked about strategy a little bit this week, and I think, you know, what you just said fits right there in there. So thank you for that. And again, this is another one of those, I say this quite a bit, but I would love to spend another hour or two talking about this. We'll have to have you back at some point and pick the conversation back up. And as always, for everybody out there, again, thank you. If you missed it at the beginning, this is our 2-year anniversary of Context and Clarity Live, which I did not realize until Catherine brought it up when we were backstage. So thank you to all of you for 2 years, right? I say this every week, but if it weren't for you, we wouldn't be having this conversation with Stuart right now, right? We wouldn't be 94, I think, Context and Clarity Lives in 2 years in at this point. So thank you to all of you for this. As always, please be well, stay safe, keep those around you safe and well. Find a little bit of time to breathe and relax. We need that. Find a way to rejuvenate. You've got to pace yourself when you do this every single day. So thanks for going along this journey with us. And again, Stuart, thank you very much for this. Keep up the great work on the videos. I'm always ready for the next one. Catherine, as always, thanks for co-hosting this with me.
My pleasure.
And we'll see everybody again next week. Well, what do you think? Did you hear something in this conversation that you can use, maybe in your practice or even in your life? If the topic of this conversation is of particular interest to you, every week in the Entree Architect Network, I host the Context and Clarity Classroom. It's our weekly opportunity to take what we've learned from our special guests and put those lessons into action in your life and in your work. Find the Context and Clarity Classroom exclusively inside the Entree Architect Network at network.entrearchitect.com. And if you are so inspired by this conversation that you'd like to watch the entire Context and Clarity Live episode, head on over to YouTube. Find the Entree Architect YouTube channel. There's a playlist there that has all of the full Context and Clarity Live episodes. You can also have the Context and Clarity podcast delivered to you every week. Just give us a rating and subscribe wherever you're listening right now. Your likes and your ratings and your shares all help us help other entrepreneur architects like you. And together, they help us build the largest worldwide community of small firm architects. And if you love content like this, check out Gable Media. It's a multimedia network for people that care about the built environment. And it's the home of Context and Clarity. With Gable's growing family of podcasts and video channels, I know that you're going to find something there that interests you. You can learn more at GableMedia.com. That's GABLmedia.com. So thanks for listening. I hope this conversation has inspired you to think about how you can build your business into something that allows you to practice the way that you want to practice.
From historic homes to modern architecture, brick is one of the most popular building materials around the world.
How to allow the house to bridge the gap between the history of the site, the approachability of this kind of architecture in this kind of neighborhood, and the sort of nostalgia of materiality for the client's past, right? And brick really started to provide an answer for that.
Hi, I'm Doug Pat, and this is Design Vault. There aren't many materials that easily blend with any style and context, but brick does just that. I've seen some extraordinary work with brick, so when Glengarry approached me about hosting this podcast, I couldn't say no.
Typically, Tudor-style houses from outside are just stunningly gorgeous piece of structure. And when you go in, it's just sad.
Yeah.
Dark. And that is not going to happen with my approach to design.
I speak with industry leaders and share inspiring stories behind their work and ingenious design.
You'll see brick that's fashioned into basket weave patterns, sawtooth patterns, what's known in England as diapering.
Doesn't sound like you knew them per se, right? They found you through relationships that you had with other.
Well, wait, Doug, there's more.
Okay.
We'll go behind the scenes to understand process and even the inspiration that sparked the design.
You know, I think we were inspired by all the factory buildings in Dumbo. I mean, that is the kind of period of significance, that early American factory building.
Design Vault by Glengarry. Visit glengarry.com/design-vault or search for Design Vault wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe now to stretch your imagination.